Welcome to the Putting Couch, episode 27. I am Jim Grunberg, along with Cody Hale and Ted Galina, part of the Seymour Putter Company's tour team, and we are happy today to do a little something different with the Putting Couch. I mean, we are about all things putting, and if you've listened to the Putting Couch podcast before this, you'll know that we've got some great episodes on teaching, on tour talk, product talk, mental game talk, but this is a real privilege because Zach Radford is our guest today, and Zach is a longtime friend of the Seymour Putter Company here in the Nashville, Tennessee area, and Zach is right in the middle of a really cool part of the golf business that a lot of people probably don't even know about, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about his unique path to get there, because Zach is he's a longtime Seymour user. He's a great player. Welcome to the Putting Couch, Zach. Great to have you here.
Really appreciate you having me on today.
And Zach, we actually kind of spent a lot of time together at Nashville Golf and Athletic Club, so I've followed your career. And you came to competitive golf late, is that correct, even after high school or college?
That is correct. So I got started into golf in high school, probably around the age of 16 or 17. I had swung some golf clubs prior to that, but not really played, and then ended up going to Tennessee for college, didn't play for those 4 years, graduated from college, was probably a 12, 13 handicap, and then wanted to really see where I could get my game over the next year. So kind of talked to my parents. I didn't owe any money from college, paid for school outright, and talked to them, was like, I'm gonna wait tables at night, I'm gonna practice all day every day, and give it a year and see where we can kind of get to. And I had some goals to where I wanted my game to get to, and I surpassed the goals within about 6 months into that year, and by the end of the year ended up with roughly a plus six handicap.
That's incredible. I mean, there's not many people that take that path, right? So, I mean, most of the players we see, you know, they either go to play in high school and go to college, and then they come out and then still don't have an opportunity to play professional. You did at a high level, because I know, because we play together. So, you know, that's, I mean, just to be able to take your talent from after college and get to where you got to at the mini tour level, I mean, it's pretty awesome. So how much time did you spend on the mini tours, and tell us about what tours you played on?
But before that, did you say you were a 12 handicap?
Roughly.
That's an 18.
To a plus six.
Yeah, plus six. So after college.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay, all right. So anything is possible.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. A lot of hard work.
A lot of hard work. And I know anybody that saw Zach on the driving range, even back, you know, in those days where he was waiting tables at night and working by day. There's one thing that Zach has, and again, nobody's born with it, but it is the big D. Distance.
Yeah.
because he used to have a crowd behind him when he was hitting balls on the range. It didn't sound the same as with other golfers.
Did you play any sports? I mean, what kind of background did you have coming up through? Did you play baseball, or what sports did you play?
I grew up playing baseball. Played at a fairly high level. The dream was to play in the major leagues. And when my family moved from Texas to Nashville in the middle of my high school, I ended up switching over to golf. The baseball at that time here in Nashville at the school I attended wasn't very competitive. It was not as much fun as I would have liked it to be. And so that was when I kind of chose to try golf. And my junior year was really the first kind of full year that I really kind of started playing golf. And I can't remember correctly, we played like 9 hole matches. I think that junior year, my average was like 38 roughly for 9. And then my senior year, I think, was just under par. And that was kind of the first time that I really had any sort of competition in golf.
Yeah, that's good. And then you obviously go to college, didn't probably play a whole lot there. And then when you get out, you start practicing and playing again. I mean, that's what it shows you. I think athletes that have, you know, I mean, you obviously have a talent of great hand-eye coordination, and that was able to translate. And as you started playing more, that allowed you to really develop. So, you know, when kids are coming up through it, I think that's important to have, play a bunch of different sports, and you create that athleticism, create that hand-eye coordination, which, you know, a lot of times translates into golf and be able to develop quicker. So you obviously developed at a true expedited level. So, and then you went on to play mini tour golf. So how did your path take you to the mini tours?
Well, I started playing at a higher level during that year, and the scores I was shooting were very competitive to some of the best players in the world. I even had the privilege to play with a few guys who had played on tour or were currently playing on tour, and I really felt like my game did line up to where they were. And so I started signing up for some mini tour events, and those scores didn't directly translate immediately into competition. When you can't feel your hands and your legs feel like noodles, it changes the game a little bit.
A little bit of pressure, a little money on the line, you know.
For sure.
Who was the one that said, like, Trevino or somebody, like, you really don't know pressure until you're playing for $10 and you don't have any money in your pocket or, you know, something like that.
But, yeah.
you understand what true pressure is when you're out there doing it for a living.
Absolutely. And so kind of, you know, went through some times of not really playing great golf out there, just trying to learn the nerves, learn the process of the week of an event, especially when I got onto what used to be called the Hooters Tour, which back then would have been a very competitive tour to theweb.com because of how many guys would go through that tour and go on to be very successful on the web and PGA Tour. So I played there for a couple years and did end up winning one on one of their smaller series. It wasn't one of their big pro series events, but I did play in the final group a few times on the weekend in the pro series events, put myself in good position, and didn't quite execute coming down the stretch in those big time events that had PGA Tour exemptions on the line at times. And those thoughts did creep in my head probably a bit too much, and the prize money probably did creep into my head, but that was part of the learning experience. You've got to put yourself in those situations to get comfortable. And each time I kind of came back, I got more and more comfortable I was playing in a group with two guys who were on the PGA Tour at the time when I won my first, I would say, highly competitive event. And so that was neat to see coming down the stretch that I could, under pressure, hold up under pressure, execute the game plan, and continue rolling the rock, as I like to say.
Yeah. So I just can't get over this, but you graduate from college and you're out there, you know, shooting 80, 82, 84. And now, what was your best score, I mean, on the mini tours, and how much time has elapsed since your rededication to the game and you playing on the mini tours? I mean, how long was that process? And again, what I know you used to go low. Tell me what kind of scores you were, you went from 80s to.
I started improving after about 2 months back from graduating college. I was shooting probably 82, 83. And I remember shooting under par roughly 6 weeks into this process. And I believe after 6 months, I was shooting 64 like once a week at Nashville Golf. There was a period of time. I remember a period of time where I had 2 months that I didn't shoot out of the 60s. None of those were in competition, but Nashville Golf's not an easy course. And I was shooting
PGA Tour, of course,
64 to 69 every single time I teed it up for about a 2 month span. That was actually the next year. My game got a little more consistent the next year, but that was probably some of the best golf even to date that I played.
Z, doing that, was it all training by yourself? Did you have an instructor that helped you, or tidbit from here or there from guys on the driving range? How did you take it so quickly from one end to the other end?
So my kind of motto for practicing was, if I were to hit 1 hour on the driving range, I would spend 4 hours inside of 40 yards. And two of those hours would be inside of 6 feet putting. So I really focused on short game, really focused on 6 feet and in putting, because if you see that ball going in the hole over and over and over, that changes your confidence on your chipping, that changes your confidence on your approach shots, and it goes all the way back to the tee box. So for me, everything started 6 feet and in.
And I know, Zach, just because we've seen you over the times, I mean, you know, I think you put a Seymour putter in play pretty early, and I remember you'd come over here to the studio and get tweaked. I mean, your dedication was incredible. How did that putter help play a role in, you know, advancing so quickly? Obviously, you realized early on that you're going to put a lot of time into putting, but how did that putter maybe help you?
To start, it helped getting fit properly. I think a lot of people overlook the fitting process for putters. They go get fitted for their irons, for their driver, and they just go grab a putter that they rolled five putts in with on a practice screen somewhere, and maybe those went in, but they weren't properly fit. So when you're rolling it well, maybe not being fit is, I'm trying to think how to word this, you kind of overlook not being fit. But when you're not putting as well as you can, being fit is so paramount in the process of being consistent with the putter. That's where the Seymour putter really has helped. And it helps me with my alignment as well. I do see a little bit of the red dot on the right side, but I see the same amount of that red dot. So I know that I'm in the right position there.
That's crazy. I think you're giving the secret sauce to all these listeners and the people that want to improve really quickly in their game. Most people play their entire life, and some of us may get worse, yeah. You know. But no, it's such a tough game. It's like what you said is so true. It's like if you can spend most of your time, I mean, I know the tour is the same way, right? You're spending most of your time, the majority of your practice inside 100 yards, or as you said, inside 40 yards, and you work back. You know, driving is important because you got to get it, you know, you got to put it in play first, but chipping and putting, I mean, you save so many strokes. I mean, if you figure out how to get that done and figure out how to get it in the hole, I mean, those, you know, 40% of your strokes are on putting, and what, 75% of your shots are inside 100 yards or so. I mean, that's truly the way to do it. So anybody listening, that's, if you're going to put some time into it, definitely put it inside of 100 yards. I mean, that's where you really see a big benefit. And obviously we've known each other for a long time, so I've seen you, you know, you're a great player, and you know, we've been working on your putting too a little bit after you got fit, and it seemed like you've continually progressed each year that you've had it in play.
Yeah, low 60s on a regular basis, I mean, is great putting, and you became a great putter, obviously. You took a product, the Seymour, that gave you a system, you practiced it, you worked it, and I mean, your advancement was was probably you know, all world. And I guess with the type of gains you were experiencing, I mean, tell me, I guess the fact that you didn't win the Masters in 3 years just sort of frustrated you and sent you from the game to this new phase of your life?
Yes. It did get a little frustrating from time to time not progressing in the professional rankings. And the dream is still there to give it a go. But I did kind of take a small detour. I was out at Nashville Golf one day when I decided to film this little idea that I had to film what I would hit quite often was a stinger. But I had an idea to film it a certain way. I hadn't really ever seen anyone film it. So at that point in time, I had been doing social media like bare bones. I knew how to take a picture, and that was about it. And so
they're good photos.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. But that was basically the extent at that time. I didn't know what the whole social media world was about. I didn't know that that was going to be something of interest. And so I filmed this video. And at that point in time, I think my most viewed video on my channel would have been like a few thousand views. And I posted this stinger. And I want to say in the first like 30 minutes, it had like 10,000 views. And I was like, oh, well, let's do that again. And so I, you know, about 150 to 250 stingers later, that was something that was always a fun shot for me. I learned how to play golf hitting the stinger. I didn't hit my driver very well early on. And so I needed something to stay in play. So I would just sit there on the driving range. And honestly, half the time I was on the driving range for that hour was hitting stingers just about. And so I started filming these stingers, which led to kind of seeing a following start to grow, led me into YouTube doing course vlogs. And now I'm so thankful to be able to travel all around the world filming these golf courses and getting to play golf while I'm doing that.
So, yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, yeah, that's I mean, your paths are so fascinating. And so you've been doing this now for a couple years, maybe more than that. It seems like you were one of the first people that I knew that was starting to really see that there were a lot of people out there looking for unique things. And as you said, so the stinger, sort of your Mr. Stinger, that sort of became your initial foot in the door was the stinger.
I would say so. The first viral video that I had was out at the golf club of Tennessee. I made this like 150-foot putt looped around the bunker.
That's right.
Yeah, that was ESPN picked it up.
They it was like did. A Sports Center top 10 maybe or
that
something.
That was, yeah. And then I actually posted it a year later and it went viral again and ESPN picked it up again. I guess their social media people changed and
oh
they
my
didn't
gosh.
Realize that they
you've been Sports Center top 10 twice for the same putt,
for
huh?
The same putt.
Which awesome. Which what putter were you using?
Oh, that was the Seymour. That was the mini giant at that time.
That's right.
Hey, so yeah, that's people will go out looking
people
for
need
that.
To go check
because that is one of the longest putts ever made. It
I
is
mean,
a crazy,
like a
yeah,
big looping.
Yeah.
Seat,
oh yeah, yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
That's a crazy putting green that they have there. And the funny thing was, I was kind of struggling with knowing what to do with social media, and I was like, I'm not sure if this is the path, and just really was spending some time trying to figure out my path with it and if this is what the Lord would have me do. And I was praying about it, went out, practiced, had my buddy film this shot, had roughly 10 minutes before we had to go. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to hit a few of these putts. So I'm not hiding the fact that I did hit a few.
Yeah.
It wasn't
yeah.
the first
yeah.
try.
Yeah.
It was actually, I think, the third attempt. So hit it, made it. That was fun. Posted it. Went to the Predators game that night, and Pecorino had one of the craziest saves I've ever seen in my life. It was, I think, in the first round, and I get out of the game, and a bunch of my friends, all the texts kind of started coming through, and a bunch of my friends were like, oh, I saw you on ESPN. I was like, what in the world? I was like, well, I guess I was like in the crowd, and they saw something, and so I was like, maybe I was there. Well, I go home, watching the top 10, Pecorino say was number 3. And as soon as they went to number 2, they announced my name. And I was like, what? I was out practicing with me and my buddy. And that ended up beating.
That
was
is
pretty
insane.
Crazy.
So. Wow. Well, so Zach, you're as you said, you still, I mean, at the way that you can sort of master things, I mean, getting back into competitive golf is still not out of the question.
Correct.
And I know just a little hallway conversation when you showed up here today, you know, Cody's sort of been a putting instructor to you. And you mentioned that you're being taken in so many directions. You're playing golf all over the place, but you really haven't, you're no longer dedicated to that same practice schedule. And I heard you ask Cody an interesting question about, you know, how to sort of, okay, somebody who's now just really doesn't have the time right now, how do you use that Seymour putter to kind of get back on track with some putting, you know, to back to your best putting, right?
Right.
Is that what you asked? So why don't you ask that again? And then I thought it was kind of a fascinating question that it kind of covered some new ground here on the putting couch.
So one of my tendencies in my just overall game is I hit down and to the left, which I'll tend to drag the handle through the hitting zone. And that actually goes all the way to my putting. So kind of a consistent struggle that I've always had is kind of dragging the putter handle through the impact zone, causing a push, kind of a block that face is open. And so that was something that I kind of mentioned to Cody that I was like, well, I haven't been able to allow myself the typical practice time that I would if I was playing in competition. I'm out filming videos, setting up the camera, hit some stingers, and I've hit a lot of stingers lately. So that down into the left motion is getting ingrained big time, which that goes all the way to my putting. And I'm sitting there editing videos and I'm like, boy, I'm aiming left and just blocking everything, which it can work if you're doing it over and over. But to be consistent and really roll the putter how I'd like to, I need to sort that out. And that was kind of what led me to the question for Cody.
So your stinging is basically just sort of bled its way into your putting.
It has.
And Cody, I mean, what would you say about that?
Well, you know, Zach's a competitor anyway. And so he wants to do everything at a high level. I mean, just watch some of his videos and you can see it through the stingers and the risers and, you know, and obviously some of the putts he hits. But, yeah, I mean, we see it a lot with great players and even, you know, your average player. So a lot of their full swing shots start in the shots they hit a lot, start to creep into the putting and the way they set up. But Zach's setup's really good. So we were just talking about how he could help sort of – we're talking about releasing the putter, and a lot of golfers have different views on how to release the putter. And we always talk about – I mean, you see players that formerly use – anchored putter, so like a broomstick style putter that Adam Scott had used, or Bernhard Langer that anchored into the chest, or a belly putter. Those are revolving around what we consider a suspension point. So one point that the butt end of the putter sort of moves around. And most great putters really have minimal suspension point. So it moves around one fixed point and it doesn't move a lot. So like Zach and a lot of great players, we were talking about as the handle starts to translate and starts to drag through, it causes issues with a face controlled impact. So being able to feel the release in a certain way and sort of match up that consistent suspension point on the way back and on the way through allows him to feel the release and hopefully help just get out of the way and let the putter head and the weight of the putter do the work without having to feel like you force something in the putting stroke. And that's really what we were talking about, is sort of just feeling the release, not so much that the toe falls over and shuts down, but just allowing the putter to more or less swing and swing on plane.
So you were saying that, you know, with the first move that Zach had, and Zach was saying, I think you were saying, Zach, you had to then sort of over exaggerate a release. And so your release was a true release, which was sort of swinging the putter from sort of, I guess, open to shut. And Cody, what you said is that, you know, set the stingers and the full shots aside, and let's just go to the putter. And you had a very simple explanation for kind of what golfers should think about.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty much that, is that, you know, when you set up and you can just get out of the way of it and let the putter head do most of the work, and it, like if you're using your bigger muscles, that the butt end should sort of run around one fixed position. And if you hold your finish, you can check that. So if the putter handle drags and it translates and you hold your follow through, then you can see where the butt end of the grip's pointed. So if it's pointed more at, let's say, your left shoulder or your left armpit, you know everything's sort of moved and you've probably blocked that putt because your hands are sort of getting more involved than they should. So really keeping everything connected and holding your follow through and seeing that putter, you know, just letting it go and letting it go sort of more underneath and letting, you know, your wrist stay solid. And if that happens, the butt end will be pointed somewhere about the center of your sternum, and that point can be argued through different teachers, but that's what it is creating just more of a, what we call a natural release pattern.
Natural release. So it's sort of, it's square at all times to the natural arc.
That's correct.
So there really isn't, you may think there's no release at all, but then you showed the putter head at each of the points in the stroke and it went from slightly inside and up and open to square, and then it released back to slightly up and
that's
and
right
close, but there was no release, it stayed on plane.
Correct. So absolutely, so when you create your path, you know, it's a lot easier for us to ensure that we get the putter to square more often if the putter head stays on plane. It's sort of like in your full swing, if you really over rotate the club on the way back, there's got to be an amount of compensation that comes into to be able to fix that. Same way with the putter, if we over rotate or under rotate, then we're going to have to compensate back at impact to ensure that our ball's getting started on line. So if we can allow our backstroke to set up our follow through and be on plane, we don't really have to time the putter all that much, and we don't really have to rely on our athleticism as much just to really find a feel that day, more so letting our technique take over.
How'd that feel to you? I mean, when you kind of looked at it.
Yeah, so it immediately kind of took hold, because I was feeling like controlling the putter face, trying to flip the putter in a sense, that putter head is turning over, like there's no control. It's not returning to the exact same place every time at impact, but kind of the under feel was just completely made sense. And I hit a couple putts right before we got on here, and definitely a new feel, something I'm gonna be working on and focusing on what Cody is saying there.
Definitely different, and probably the feeling of a flip is never good, right? Correct. For a good player. They right. know when they hit a good putt. Right. And trying to match that up right. and give a new sort of, a like Zach said, a different feel. You know, you got to have a little bit of feedback to make that change and that different feel. Then you'll start getting back in. And then, you know, the guys like Zach know as soon as they hit a good putt, they know how to match that feel up, start making it happen more often.
So the putting stroke really, it can and probably should be different than your other swing, I guess, is kind of the takeaway there. Although a lot of golfers feel like, well, no, they got one swing, but the putter really behaves so different dynamically, right? There's no shaft bow, there's no right. torque and twist and all the, you know, forces that you put on with that one iron or even your nine iron. So with the putter, I mean, I think what Cody's showing you is, hey, let that putter do the work. It's okay. It's putting is 40% of the game. It's one different stroke that you're going to have to learn. And I know when you were shooting all those great scores back there, that's what you were doing. And then, as you said, it just kind of crept in.
Correct. Yeah, it was definitely something that needs to be practiced because your old tendencies will start creeping in if you're not putting the time in to just make sure that, you know, your alignment's good, your tempo's good. I mean, those are the two things that I'm always working on, even when I'm not able to practice a lot, is tempo and alignment.
Those are perfect things. And so players that, you know, most of us that are whatever, most amateur golfers aren't going to put a lot of time into it. So what Zach just said is great takeaways, is if you can practice your alignment, practice your tempo, and then, you know, create a good setup. And that's what we focus on a lot of times, is building a good setup so that if you're not playing a lot, at least you can only control certain things. And you definitely can control your setup and then how you practice. And so, you know, you do those two things, and hopefully we encourage you to put a little bit of time into it. But if you don't have the time, those are important parts to practice.
That's fantastic. Well, we are here with Zach Radford, and we're just fascinating story in golf. And Zach, so tell us right now, I mean, I know you said you're sort of doing a lot of different even social media and on-course video stuff. How do you decide, like, when you're going to put out one of those, like, you know, a little something special? Is that sometimes it's planned, and I guess sometimes it's not planned? And how does that work?
Most of the time it's not planned. Most of the time it's I'm out playing a golf course and all of a sudden there it is. That's the shot. So I take time, set up the camera. Normally most of the stingers in the shots are one or two attempts. I don't hide that sometimes it takes more than one because we're trying to make it look cool and everything. And so, but for the majority of the time, it's going to be my first or second attempt, unless I'm trying to hit it through like a 3-foot gap 50 yards in front of me. That one may take a few more attempts, but for the most part, the stingers, it's going to be on the first or second attempt, and normally it's kind of in the moment. I see a hole a certain way, and it's like, this is perfect. It's going to look good on camera. Now you just got to execute the shot.
That's fun. What else do you want to tell us about?
Well, I got a quick question. Yeah. What's the one thing you've learned from doing the social media, being an influencer from when you were just starting to where you are now? What's one thing that you've learned that either has enhanced what you've done so far, or something you could probably give a tip to someone out there that maybe wants to shoot a video a certain way and so forth?
Yeah. Find a repeatable process. So I think a lot of people go out there and are looking for that one viral video, which is great, but you can't really build a career off of social media off of one viral video, really. It's probably happened, but I'm looking to want to do a repeatable process. So like my 9-hole course vlogs on my YouTube channel, those aren't really viral videos, but hopefully people enjoy watching them, enjoy coming along for the journey. So enjoy the process, enjoy the journey, and really find like a repeatable process of content that you can just really repeat kind of on a daily routine. Because if you don't have that daily content, it's going to be tough to really do it if this is something you want to do for a career.
Since this is the putting couch, I'm gonna say that process and finding a repeatable process is a really good thing for putting as well. Find your routine, find your process, and really stick to it, and you'll see the consistency start to prove itself. And I think you'd probably say the same thing in social media, right?
For sure. And don't get me wrong, viral videos are great and they do help build things, but you can't like have a career on a few viral videos. And I just try to encourage people, you don't have to have just crazy ideas. Just go out there and start creating. Before I got started, I felt like the least creative person that I've ever met. I dislike taking photos. I dislike videos. And that all changed, obviously, and I absolutely love it. And it's something that just go out there and start doing. Like, don't sit there and plan. Like, because you can sit there and beat around the bush for forever trying to plan. Go out there and just start filming, mess up, make mistakes, learn from it, and try to improve the next time.
That's awesome. And we've been with Zach Radford. He's also got a new brand, Ostrich.
Yes.
And, you know, I guess, where can they find that?
So you can find it on ostrich.com. There's no I. So we just started working on this brand with my brother. And it was an idea like probably a year ago that we kind of started tossing around the idea. And there's three of us, and it was something we've been working on. And we wanted to build a brand where I could kind of step into more of a mentoring role in the social media world, where I could really help other, you know, younger kids coming up in the social media world, where we would be able to basically facilitate an arena for them to create content. So big picture dream, we'd like to have like a warehouse that we build a few golf holes, and we would have like a whole kind of miniature golf area. And so just have creators come and there's your playing field to create content. So that's the big dream for Ostrich. That's down the line. But I just wanted to create a fun brand that we could really, you know, partner with great other brands and really be able to facilitate some neat things around the world where we can really help people in need as well. And if you can build a brand that can start facilitating some finances to make those things happen. And I just wanted to work with friends and family as well. So we started kind of talking about the clothing line Ostrich between my brother and my brother-in-law. And this is kind of where we are today. That was about a year ago when we kind of started talking about it. And now we are officially launched a couple months ago. And now we should have the hats rolling in soon. We've got the t-shirts up on the site now, but it's going to be a full line here in the next year, hopefully. So we're working on one piece at a time, but awesome. Really enjoying the process.
Awesome. And to follow your exploits on the golf course, I mean, you know, in the trick shots, where do we go?
Real Zach Radford on Instagram, and then just Zach Radford on YouTube.
Very cool. Ted, any final thoughts?
Yeah, and one, what we're going to do for Zach coming along today, we're going to help, we're going to give out some nice swag for Ostrich shirt and hat combo. So we're going to post this on our Instagram page, Seymour Putters on Instagram. We want you to follow ostrich.official.
Correct.
And Seymour Putters, and then tag a friend, and that will get you signed up to have the possibility of maybe winning a nice swag package from the Ostrich brand.
Well, good. Well, we've been listening to episode 27 of The Putting Couch, a little bit of a unique format today, but we have had a man, Zach Radford, who went from shooting in the 80s when he graduated from college to shooting in the low 60s at a PGA Tour course within the year. So pretty fascinating. He's done a lot of cool things. We love having him sort of on the Seymour team, and it's a really fun story. So hopefully everybody, I know they had to enjoy it because we certainly did. Thank you, Zach.
Really appreciate you having me on today.
We appreciate you joining us. If you haven't subscribed to the show, make sure you do wherever you're listening. Be sure to leave a rating and review, because that's how we get the Putting Couch podcast content in front of more people. Also, take a screenshot and share it on social media and tag us at Seymour Putters or hashtag Team Seymour.